That music can mean only one thing, but I forgot what that is. Actually, I know what it is. The Gurus of How To, Alvin and Lawrence U. Bell, are here. They visit our show once a month to talk about home repair and related matters and to take your calls.
Definitely to take the calls.
Yes.
We live for the calls.
Do you?
We live for the calls.
After, you know, what the audience doesn't know is that after every segment, pretty much every segment, you both seem to be energized, and you almost invariably say, gee, that was great.
Mm-hmm.
So no, you really do enjoy
some
this.
Some are not that great sometimes.
Excuse me.
In retrospect.
They're all great.
We try.
Well, no, we take listener calls at 212-433-9692. Sometimes people will leave comments on our at our show page at WNYC.org. And then a lot of people send me emails afterward.
Which really two things happen. One, you forward them to me. I don't check the address, so I usually respond back to you when you say, no, not me. Send it to them.
Well, you know an awful lot about a home repair, but you don't seem to know about email.
Well, I hit reply, and you're the one who sent it to me.
Yeah.
Also, when you visit us, you have a quiz, and we will have one today as well. But before we get to the quiz, you wanted to talk about the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission's estimates that approximately 3,800 injuries and 34 deaths result each year from scalding by excessively hot tap water in the home?
Well, if you take...
I wish I could get hot tap water in my home.
You got... Well, in actuality, there's a chart that... our firm had put together, which became almost nationwide acceptance as to what degree you get a second or third degree burn. And at 160 degrees, you can get a third degree burn in less than a half a second. That's how quickly you will get a burn. So what's happening is that for many years, we've been promoting that there should be some sort of restrictions. And some of the restrictions have been put into on the New York State Building Code side, but in New York City Building Code, they were sort of lackadaisical about it. And just recently, the legislature has put together some legislation that multiple dwellings will have to control their water up to 120 degrees. In other words, you can't go over 120 degrees, because even at 120 degrees, a child sitting in water for a considerable length of time will get a scalding condition. So I think this was a good move. I hope it passes the legislature, and I hope it goes forward.
And what happens is sometimes people turn on the tap and the water comes out exceedingly hot.
Well, the problem is that many of the multiple dwellings, apartment buildings, produce their domestic hot water through an internal coil on a steam system. Now, the interior of a boiler, a steam boiler, could be anywhere, obviously minimum of 212 degrees, that's boiling, but it could be as much as 230 to 250 degrees in that boiler. That means the water coming out of the faucet can be excess of 160, 170 degrees if there is no tempering device like an automatic mixing valve. And so if you don't have one of those, the water could be coming out very hot. Or if you have a hot water system where the interior of the hot water is 180 degrees and you can get extremely hot water.
How much contact must you have? Sometimes you can accidentally stick your finger in boiling water and you don't get a burn.
Well, your hands are different than the rest of your body.
They're subject to abuse by what you use with your hands. The skin is a little bit tougher on your hands than it is on your butt. So you got to really be distinguished between the two of them, especially a child. Or an older person could be severely injured for life with scalding hot water.
And that's because A, infants cannot tell us what's going on, and B,
they just go,
they just scream. And elderly people have sometimes neurological problems where they may not even feel the burning until it's way too late. So right now, people who have single-lever mixing valves on their showers, like you'll see in hotels and motels, those are safety devices also. What that does is stop the scalding because of differential in pressure. What this legislation is about is to limit the temperature of the water that, whatever, even if you turn it all the way to hot, The maximum temperature would be 120 degrees, and we think it's a really good thing because a lot of people do get hurt.
There is going to be a lot of complaints about people with dishwashing machines and clothes washing machines and stuff like that. But I think the industry will acclimate to the safety situation. But hopefully this legislation will go through. We don't know whether it's going to go through or not. It's still pending in Albany.
My guests are the gurus of How To, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And should we go to some of these calls?
Oh, yes, we didn't do the quiz.
And by the way, this is the same one from last month.
Oh, we didn't get the answer.
No, we didn't.
And but just one little point. If anybody wants this scalding chart that was created, they can go onto our website and just ask for the scalding chart. Just punch up scalding chart, and it'll come up on our website, and they can download it.
And you brought me a copy. And if you have a good color printer, it really
it's
is
very
pretty.
It's very pretty.
It really is. It's got a lot of color in it. What is the quiz, Lawrence?
What is the term or phrase that describes a sequential progressive failure which is caused by multiple improper placement of fasteners, perforation, corrosion, or deterioration?
In other words, this is something where this thing starts and then it grows?
Exactly.
Right. And what is that effect called?
Okay. And our number for that as well is 212-433-9692. Let's go to our first caller, Kurt from New York. You're on the air.
Hello, Kurt.
Hey, guys.
What's up?
I'm a writer.
Wow.
I'm impressed. I've never met a writer before.
Yes.
Well, at least not in the last, well, anyway.
A couple of minutes.
What can we do for you, Kurt?
Well, I want to work on a satire, and what I need to do is take the novel that I'm satiring of and cut it up, and I want to mount it on the wall so I can see it all laid out, and then I can mark it up.
You don't want to just have a bulletin board?
Well, it would be about roughly 8 feet by 6 feet.
Yeah, what I would do is if you want to use thumbtacks, what I would use is this stuff called composition board or homosode, which is basically cellulose, pressed cellulose. And I used to use it for model building because you can actually stick through the balsa wood with needles into the composition board. And it works very good. And I think it comes in 4x8 sheets.
4x8 sheets.
And they're not very expensive.
And then what would he do? Tack it on the wall?
He could either tack it on, screw it on, glue it on. It's not very heavy.
It's actually almost like a very thick cardboard.
Cardboard.
And isn't this what we use in school when we make posters?
That's right. It's called homosode.
And what's also very good about it is that it's not that expensive. It's a lot cheaper than caulk, but it will fall apart after a while. But if this is just a temporary project, I think this is the perfect application.
Okay.
So it's called homosote, and I buy a roll of it.
No. It comes in sheets.
At places like Pearl Paint.
Yeah, it's like half inch thick. But actually, I would actually look at hardware stores and home centers and lumber yards.
Yes, and what's you just keep it away from fire. It's very combustible.
Yeah, well.
Thank you for calling us, Kurt. We go now to Dan from, where is this?
Manhattan.
From Manhattan, yes. Yeah. Another Manhattanite. Boy, we're hitting the...
What's up, Dan?
Hi. I have a toilet with one of those water tanks that's up above your head with a chain on it.
Oh, yeah, like the old style type.
The old style, yeah. I live in a loft downtown, and it leaks, and I have to rebuild it. And what I want to do is lower the thing down to, you know, like the normal height where... You know, just a little bit above the toilet. And my wife is concerned that it is a requirement for it to be elevated for the water pressure. And my thinking is that is not going to be a significant factor. Is she right?
She's wrong. I mean, the water pressure will come down a little bit stronger as the altitude above the toilet bowl is greater.
Right.
But the differential will not be that great. And they are what they call special tanks that you could buy that are made by many manufacturers, American Standard.
But he wants to keep the same tank.
You want to use the same tank?
No, I do want another tank. Actually building one, just making one. Out of wood.
No, you don't have to make it. Don't make it.
No. You're not listening. This is an artistic thing he's doing.
All right. Oh.
Am I right?
Well, actually, you know, I just really want to solve the problem. I was making a nice one out of wood for you know, to be attractive.
Yes, I caught that. I mean, once you said wood, I said this guy's doing art. He's not. It's not necessarily a toilet.
I'm looking for functionality.
Well, you gotta think both. If it was just functionality, we'd all be sitting on stainless steel.
I used to be an artist, and all my art went down the toilet. So
this is to beautify the
form follows function. Go ahead.
But go on. Anyway, but yeah, you can lower the height of the height from the from the tank to the toilet.
It'll still flush.
Now, is wood the best material to use for a toilet tank?
Problem. I have to line it really well. I think I'm going to use some epoxy.
If you're going to use a fiberglass and resin, make sure you do put the fiberglass in there. Don't coat it with resin because that'll flake off. Or you can create a copper liner if you wanted to.
But if you take a look at any catalog or go on the internet at the American Standard Kohler, they made these tanks special, and they even make things that look like a wood, and they have it in all different kinds of colors and stuff like that that can be mounted right on the wall, have all the adapter connections and fittings to make it work right off the shot, and it also has all the float mechanisms inside and anything that it has to make the thing flush properly.
Thank you so much for your call. We go now to Ross from Manhattan. Hi, Ross.
Yes, hi.
What's up, Ross?
First, gentlemen, thank you so much for your work. I've been waiting almost a month to talk with you. I live in an apartment building, and I'm going to describe a situation briefly, and I hope you can solve it. The water backs up into the bathtub and the bathroom sink in my apartment and also my next-door neighbors. And every time they come to snake it out, it lasts for about a month or 6 weeks, and then it happens again. And
now, wait, where does this water come from?
Well, first of all, what floor are you on?
It's actually, pardon me, it's the second story.
Of how many?
Out of about 20.
Okay, what's happening is that your bathroom and your neighbor's bathroom is probably back-to-back?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, and in the middle there's a line that goes down, and it's probably a blockage right below in the main line, mm-hmm. in right below where your sink and what'd you say, tub or toilet?
No. Well, sometimes the toilet, but it's usually
They're all connected to probably the same 4 or 6, probably 4-inch line.
What he's describing, though, by the way, is that they clean it out, they snake it out, and it comes back.
Yeah.
It's probably a chunk of cement that was probably accumulated by some contractor that poured the cement down
I'm not speculating what I don't know, but what I do know is that there's probably some kind of obstruction there which is catching the debris. And they clean it out, the snake goes through, but that thing is still there catching the debris. Whether it's a chunk of concrete, whether it's someone flushed down a coat hanger or something that got stuck in there. So really what they're going to have to do is chop open a wall and open up the pipe actually reach down with their hands and figure and pull out what's really causing the blockage there. But we are talking an extensive type of repair here, where they're going to have to break up walls, possibly ceilings, to get to it.
Yeah, what's not unusual in a large apartment house like that, you'll have painters and contractors come in to do alterations or repair, and they'll clean their brushes and their paraphernalia, mm-hmm. and all of this solidifies someplace in the piping system. Oh, we find this all the time, and that could be one of the maladies.
But you had one last thought you wanted to ask.
Yeah, one plumber, or actually two of them, said they should come and do an inspection with a camera that goes down into the pipes. Do you think that's a good idea?
Yeah, because that will more or less tell them exactly where the blockage is.
So they don't have to make a big cut.
So they don't have to break up more than they have to. So, yeah, that would actually save money in the long and the short run. So it would actually be a good idea to do that. But, you know, it's definitely – if people below that don't have the problem, then it's somewhere within the 8 or so feet between the floor below and your floor. Okay?
We're going to take a little break, and we'll come back with more of your calls to the gurus of how to, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell. Stay with us. We're back with the gurus of how-to, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell. We're taking your calls at 212-433-9692, and we have a quiz in effect. What is the term or phrase that describes a sequential progressive failure which is caused by multiple improper placement of fasteners, perforations, corrosion, or deterioration? And we have a couple of people who think that they have the right answer.
Very good, very good.
Let's go to the first caller, and that is Fred from Croton on Hudson. Hi, Fred. What do you think it is?
Yes, hi. I think you already gave the answer, progressive failure. I didn't hear that last month.
But that's not the answer.
That's a description.
That's the description of what is a term that describes this. That's actually more of
it's a mechanical term that is utilized in the industry mm-hmm. when something sequentially takes place that
a colloquial. Okay,
Fred, it's not. You didn't have the answer, Fred.
That
thank
are
you.
Connected.
Yes.
We'll try another caller. Steve from Dobbs Ferry.
Hi, Steve.
Well, we got Croton on the Hudson Hello. To Dobbs Ferry. What do you say it is, Steve?
I think it's zippering.
We were looking for zipper effect, but you know what? Anything with zipper in it was going to work for us.
Very good.
How did you know this?
It seems to me about 20 years ago, there was a transit center, maybe Journal Square, where there was a ceiling failure, and it was described as zippering, where it would pop out one hanger after another.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what it is.
Collapsed.
Right, that's exactly what it is.
And it looks like a zipper, doesn't it?
Yes.
Sometimes what happens is actually if you drill, like if you put a bunch of screws in line on a piece of wood that are in the same grain, it'll weaken it, and as more load is put on, it will open along all the screws, kind of like a zipper being pulled apart.
It's the same as perforated paper.
Yes.
You know, the perforated paper, when you tear it right on the perforation, that's called the zipper effect.
So,
okay, I'm going to put you on hold, and
I do have a question.
Oh, sure.
Okay, well, wait, but after the question, I'm going to put you on hold,
okay.
And you'll give an address to my staff member. And what will
receive? They'll get the Alubel Energy Saving Guide.
No,
for
they will not.
Oh, it's Save Energy, Save Money by
Save Money, Save Energy by Alubel and George Marlis.
George Marlis.
Anyway, you've got to get something.
Too many books.
What's the question, Steve?
The question is, last month you talked about the advantages of going to a separate water heater instead of a boiler that has to run 12 months a year
right.
to heat your water.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had heard for years that it would shorten the life of a boiler if you left it cold but with water in it, like through the summer season. Is that so, or is that just...
No. That's not true. Especially if it's a hot water boiler. Because once the hot water boiler releases all its oxygen from the air, I mean, all the oxygen that's in the water and it gets bled out, there's really no corrosion. Once you got rid of the oxygen, there's no corrosion to go on. As far as steam units are concerned, if you were at all concerned about that, because they do create a lot of corrosion normally under normal operation, you can actually drain out the whole boiler during the summer, but it's really not a concern, and I'm sure it really does offset the energy savings.
Yeah, but the other aspect of it is that when the part that is covered with water does not get in contact with oxygen. If you would drain out all the water in that boiler, mm-hmm. what happened is that area that has been had water in it is now exposed to oxygen, and the oxygen is what causes the oxidation of the boiler. So, but shutting a boiler off and not using it all summer long is the best economic thing you can do for your heating system and have a separate water heater.
And you really have to also understand that many, many, many buildings throughout the country shut down their heating plants during the summer and okay. without any kind of negative.
Okay, Steve, I'm going to put you on hold, and you okay. give your address to my producer, okay?
All right. Thank you.
And we go now to Phil from Queens. Hi, Phil. You're on the air.
What's
Hi.
Up?
Hi. Happy New Year to everybody.
Thank you. You too.
So I have not a little apartment problem, but I have a house,
mm-hmm.
and I've got a brick porch about 20 feet wide that goes over a driveway that leads to a basement garage.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a concrete, about 8-inch steel-reinforced slab with two I-beams running the length
mm-hmm.
at the house. And at the front, what has happened, the retaining wall over the last 20 years has moved in towards the driveway by about an inch and a half. And mm-hmm. the brick pillar has, of course, it's sort of stayed
mm-hmm.
and is now moving to the left. Mm-hmm. And you know, to redo it's probably like 10 grand or more. But I want to put a couple of heavy-duty jacks up, try to raise the concrete slab, and then, because I love doing pointing, I'd like to rebuild the brick pillar myself.
Well, I'll tell you, describing it on the radio here, like you did, is you did a pretty good job of it, but in order to evaluate what's going on, why did that retaining wall shift, why did this happen, why did that happen, has to take a field examination in order to make a determination of where the forces are that is causing that problem. In other words, there may be something, maybe there's a crevice underneath the place where you have the retaining wall where water is getting into it, and it's freezing in the wintertime and actually pushing that retaining wall away, and eventually it's out of plumb. In other words, it's not perpendicular
right.
any longer.
Well, there were two giant trees historically there. My neighbor built a giant extension from the back of their house to the side of my house. And I'm slightly downhill, so there's some drainage coming there. I've redone the concrete walkway several times, but I do have to keep caulking between the retaining wall and the walkway. Mm-hmm. So both trees are gone now, but I think that had something to do with it.
There's no question about it, but that cavity that is created by that wall being moved has caused a new cavity where an abundance of greater amount of moisture and water can accumulate, and maybe that has to be weeped out. You know, it may have to drill holes through the retaining wall and get water out of it, like some way that it dries out the cavity and doesn't cause that wall to continue to shift. But you also say about the porch, you want to jack it up and everything else. That could be very tricky if you don't do it properly. If you pinpoint jack it, you'll probably break it. You have to jack it with a steel support section that the whole unit gets pulled up or pushed up monolithically rather than piecemeal. So this is a really tricky kind of engineering kind of thing that has to be evaluated by a trained person to make that determination and give you a description on how to correct it.
It's not, let's put it this way, it's just not a telephone radio kind of diagnosis.
But we thank you for calling us. And we go now to Chuck from Irvington, New Jersey. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Well, had a little problem this weekend. Through the snow, a drunk driver actually hit my house. And I have a brick veneer house with also a brick porch.
But he drove into your house.
Excuse me?
He drove into your house like they do in the movies.
Well, he said the house stepped out in front of him.
I can believe that.
But he
That's a good excuse.
My front steps and all the brick veneer, you know, on the side of the porch. And I guess there is a slab underneath now that I can see. Mm-hmm. My question to you, I just got off the phone with my claims adjuster. Mm-hmm. Do I need to get an engineer out here or just a general contractor to look at this?
The short answer is you need to get an engineer and architect out there to make an evaluation if there was other structural damage, you know, just not the veneer. I mean, the veneer being replaced is easy, but to give someone an opportunity to examine the framing in that corner of the building and to make a determination whether he feels that needs structural repair.
So that the porch is actually separate from the house. The house itself is like a block, and the looks like the porch was added later on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like it's on a slab, but also all the brick veneer was continued around the porch. It does have a roof on top, and some of the stanchions are out of line. Basically, you know, I don't want to get under claimed or underpaid,
exactly.
You know what I mean, from the insurance company.
Well, there's a couple of things that we want to say as far as being underclaimed is that, A, the consulting of an engineer, B, the dumpsters that need to take away the debris, and three and four is architectural fees and filing fees.
Yeah.
So make sure they all get put into the estimate. The adjuster knows about those too.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things when something happens and an adjuster comes in. They leave off things that become evident after they give you an appraiser and you're signed for the amount of money.
Right.
What happened is, as Larry just said, that the dumpster is a couple of $1,000 to take away all the garbage, and then you have to have an architect take a look at it. And that's another fee, and if there's a structural damage, he may have to file it with the buildings department. So there's another fee on top of that. So you got to get all these fees together in order to know what you're doing.
Now, would a general contractor do that, or
get an architect?
Hire each professional myself.
Get an architect or an engineer first, and then get a contractor. A contractor will not include in his bill all of the soft costs that you may have to contend with.
Okay, Chuck.
Thank you much.
No problem.
We go now to Don, who's calling us from Algiers in North Africa. Is that true, Don?
Hello?
Yeah, I'm currently in my bathtub in Algiers, Algeria, North Africa with a severe scalding problem.
Is it the hot weather or is it the water?
No, it's actually Algerian know-how, I think, or it may be that I don't know what I'm talking about as a former unlicensed plumber in down east Maine many years ago.
But yeah.
The problem is this. I get scalded every morning in the shower. The water is currently turned off, and I have to carry the hot water from the kitchen to have my bath, and I'm annoyed. And the problem is there's three apartments, a restaurant, and a boulangerie downstairs. And the water in the morning goes terribly, terribly scalding hot, then cold, et cetera, et cetera, but enough to seriously burn you.
Let me ask you a question.
Can
I ask you a question first? Because one of the things is, okay. Hang on. Let me get in here for a second. Do you have two valves or one valve on the shower?
I have one valve, but it is made in China.
Okay. I'm not sure what the problem
is. It doesn't mix anything.
Well, you have to get whatever it is. You're going to have to hire someone to install a tempering valve that is able to mix cold water with the hot water and also regulate the difference between the two so that the water temperature is constant. The hot water level is constant as it comes out of the faucet,
and it's very hard.
But the confusing part is that in addition to that, there's also it goes from zero pressure, no hot water, to blasting hot water. And what they suggested is we're on our fifth plumber. They're going to put in line a pump and a new reservoir, etc. And I said, look, in the U.S. we just put ballast every so often in the line, pre-pressurized things, whatever you call them, and that will solve the problem. And they look at me in sort of Algerian, which is a combination of French and Arabic, and say, you're crazy, there is no such thing.
Well, let me tell you what you do. There's a French edition of Architectural Graphic Standards by Ramsey and Sleeper. Why don't you get a copy of that? And they'll tell you, in that book, they'll tell you how to put all kinds of plumbing together.
But what I'd also like him to do is, actually, if you can, take some pictures and write a detailed email to me and send it to me at larry@ubell.com. That's larry@ubell.com. And let me look it over because there might be equipment there that he's not telling me about. And the last time I was in Algeria was never. So I'm not really familiar with their plumbing system.
I did really like the echo effect of him calling us in the bathroom.
And also the delay because we're talking halfway around the planet.
We go now to George from Manhattan. A little closer to home. Hi, George.
Hi, how are you?
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Not anymore.
Boy, that was fast. Okay. Sari from New York. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a question. I just moved into an apartment, and you said a housing project.
Mm-hmm.
And my problem is the main door. The main door is really closed. It closed the door, everything. But the problem is on the side, you know, it's like somebody's pushing with the wind.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you hear all the noise like somebody's pushing the door, but it's not really nobody, it's just the wind.
So the door is loose and whenever there's a draft the door rattles.
Yes.
Okay, and does the door open, is this the front door to the apartment?
Yes.
And it opens into your apartment, right?
Yes.
And the pressure is pushing the door open, correct?
Yes.
Do you have windows open in your apartment?
Yes. No, 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 not really. No, because with this weather, no.
No?
Well, the only way you can do that, you can put a spring balance on your door that'll keep the door closed with underneath the spring loading pressure. Or you can put a door check onto that door that'll automatically close the door and keep it closed. And it'll have enough pressure against most kinds of breezes or wind that'll blow against the door.
But you really do, if you're not really that equipped to do it, you really need to get a door repair person in
there. A locksmith will do
that kind of work. And that's...
Yeah, but I spoke with one of the guys from Lakshmi, and they told me that maybe I need to get a machine or something. That's what he told me. You need a machine that we don't carry. We don't do it. So you got to get somebody else. I don't know how.
A machine.
I'm not sure.
It's a door check type of device or a door closing, a balanced spring door closer that every single locksmith has in his possession.
So maybe you need to call a different locksmith.
That's it.
And we unfortunately have run out of time. Would you believe it?
Really?
But we'll be seeing you again on February 11th, very close to a major president's birthday.
Yes. Yes, it will.
A president whose name has been invoked an awful lot recently. And what will you be – what I guess my big closing question, other than where should people send their email questions, that's to larry@ubell.com, U-B-E-L-L. But what will you be doing?
We will be
going forth and save energy, money, and
doing it safely.